Welcome to episode 18 of Corner of Hunter and George, Peterborough, Ontario's art culture podcast. And before I begin the narrative for tonight's episode, I think, like usual, it's becoming a Catholic habit of mine, even though I was born and raised Protestant, but I don't know, I feel like I need to pay penance for my past errors. So I think I just resolved one of them. I need to have, like, a hook at the beginning. I've been lacking that. Well, at least saying Peterborough, Ontario's art culture podcast. There's one. I granted maybe need some music at the beginning, but you heard some there. You heard of tonight's guest, but do I need, like, my own unique riff? I'm not sure. That's a pondering question, and also a lot of other technical errors I've been improving on, but could improve more. But anyway, let me get into the narrative of today's episode. So we have upcoming in Peterborough this upcoming Tuesday. It's from Tuesday, June 21st, 2022 to the 26th. Our NIF, or Ngogujunong Indigenous Fringe Festival, only the second year it's been running, but I think it's already one of Peterborough's most artistic, dynamic events. And I could have really done a whole month on this. Well, at least I got one person who's coming this year. All the way from Calgary, originally from Driftpile Cree Nation in Alberta, District 8. His name is Sean Beaver. So let's give it a bit of a bio and a bit of a story for Sean Beaver. He's an independent techno-electronic Indigenous artist based in Calgary. And he incorporates, you know, some ways he doesn't sound really the same as A Tribe Called Red, but there are definitely similarities. So he has that same thing of incorporating his Indigenous heritage into the music with select powwow elements, percussion, and vocal chants. Incredibly high energy to his music, live loops, originally produced music. And he's basically going on how he's a sounding of a cross between Teenage Mutants, Chemical Brothers, and Richie Hawtin. If you don't know that, then I guess you're nearly not into electronic music. But I think it's best then you listen, because I'm going to try and play a bit of him throughout the episode. He's most proud of, among many other things, he's been sober since 2006. He's got a huge amount of material behind him. He used to be in a band in the 2000s. Up till 2012, called Red Nation. He's been making music since about the 1990s. He's got about 6 albums, plus he has another full album set for release. He was recently nominated for the Rap Hip Hop Electronica Album of the Year at the 2021 Summer Solstice Indigenous Music. He's won a past Aboriginal Choice Awards. And yeah, he's just outstanding, dynamic electronic artist. I think one of the best the country has right now. You are about to hear my clumsy but very enjoyable discussion with calm, mild-mannered Sean Beaver.
I'm here in Peterborough, Ontario, where we're looking forward to you coming in, I guess, still over 10 days now or something like that. So that's one thing we'll get into later, but I'm just I guess I'll start off with, I don't really know much about Calgary's music scene. I guess I take it you've been there for a little bit. So I don't know. I do hear a lot of things about, like, Calgary changing a lot as a city from, say, the one I knew when I grew up in the 80s, when I went there a few times. But I don't know if there's anything you can comment about Calgary's music scene or how long you've had a personal experience there.
Well, the difference between now and the 80s music scene has changed a huge amount.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Yeah, the social scene is still pretty much the same, where there's a nightclub aspect where it's not as heavy as it used to back in the 80s, especially with Electric Avenue and the abundance of clubs and bars all downtowns and certain strips. Now it's little pockets of here and there, and they do have their I wouldn't say they're diehards, but the their crowd of people. And one thing I like is about Calgary is I used to live in Edmonton, and Edmonton's music scene was more folk hip-hop based, and Calgary's is more electronic and some hip hop. And then me being within the history of my previous group, it was a native hip hop group, that kind of filled that aspect. But I was able to grow as my own solo, as my own solo artistry into the electronic scene that's here in Calgary.
Right. So are you saying sort of the combination of electronic and hip hop worked like you were just more in sync with what Calgary was doing, even though I believe you lived closer to Edmonton growing up, if that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. The, my reserve is Driftball Cree Nation, which is 3.5 hours northwest of Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much like a weekend getaway, or if I had, I was able to get away from the reserve, it'd be definitely Edmonton would be the closest city as opposed to Grand Prairie, which is more of a bigger town than a city. But yeah, Grand Prairie didn't have the West Edmonton Mall, so there's that.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I once had the experience when I was probably at least half my age I am now of tree planting just a bit. I more around Peace River and areas like that when I was I kind of once was in that area a bit, but so when was it you came to Calgary, like I guess of like how long have you been in the city itself?
I moved to Calgary in 2009. It was actually I think December 30th of 2008. Mm-hmm. And spent a couple of days, brought in the new year, 2009. I had started my practicum for radio broadcasting at CKCE, which I'm still there. And that was in 2009. So I've been in the city since then.
Okay. All right. And you say, I've read that your influences are sort of a combination of people like Richie Houghton and Chemical Brothers, which... Mm-hmm. When I've listened to your stuff so far, I do hear like a lot of kind of Chemical Brothers kind of sound to it. Like not exactly, but I can see where that influence comes from more or less. But I Richie Houghton, like I guess I acquaint him more with more of a minimalist kind of sound. So I don't know if you could speak to all the something that like something listening to Richie Houghton adds to your music at all.
Definitely the aspect of live does cover some of the Richie Houghton kind of stylings and sounds, because the live version of what I do on stage does have loops and edits, and they're just fired off within certain lengths. So then it just kind of builds within the recorded stuff that I have as well. So there's two different aspects, especially within a live show that I do, where I have incorporated a hybrid live version of my sets. And the hybrid part is that I will have produced material that I have mostly released. There's some that I haven't released yet, and that's a whole lot of unreleased stuff that I'll be sharing first with a lot of people in Peterborough, so this is going to be fun.
That's great. Yeah,
and then with that, it's the transitions in between, where I'll give a breather between tracks that have already been released, are things that are more familiar, more melodic, are more structured, which I guess would be a better term, and go into that realm of minimalist. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, here's a hi-hat, a nice thumping kick from a 909, and then roll it with some nice little synth bass line or some minimalistic sounds, building some soundscape, and then just in the background with the delay and echoes and a bunch of random effects, and then tossed in and building those little elements. Not so much Plastic Man-esque, but more of the more, I wouldn't say mainstream Richie Houghton, because he's not really mainstream. Depends on where you are, I guess.
I wouldn't call him mainstream. No. But But I mean, the Chemical Brothers, I guess, were at one time around, you know, rock, rock and beats and that sort of thing 20 odd years ago or 25 odd years ago. But yeah,
definitely with Dig Your Own Hole. It just had that.
Yes. Yeah.
Gravitated to a lot of people that were looking for a new sound, especially from the UK. And yeah, right. Chemical Brothers definitely filled that.
And is this stuff you'd be listening to when you were growing up on in Driftpile Cree Nation?
Yeah. The music that I play, or is it
no like around this like Richie Haught and Chemical Brothers yes. sort of sound? Yeah.
Yeah, being unreserved and limited to different luxuries, I guess, reaching out to different different avenues to grab music that is either new, different, or unique was always a nice little grab for myself. I'm one of those kids that grew up with Napster, so I was able to able to kind of share music with other friends around the world, and with that they would. It's like, hey, have you ever listened to this? Have you ever heard of this? Or, you know, this and that. And it's kind of opened up a little bit more into the electronic realm where you have different artists that you've never heard of before, like Monster Truck Driver would be one of them, or very weird trance-like sounds from like DJ Tauscher, or those oldie ones like Ayla, or... Above and beyond. One of the great things that I realized younger and I do now is I've kind of stick into my own pocket of what I'm able to do as an artist, but it's not really what I'd like to do because I can't do it in a sense. I am a self-taught artist or a composer or performer or whatever it is that I am that, I've self-learned. I've learned everything by myself, and then it's only to the limits of what I learned to produce what I have. And there's other different music styles that I wouldn't mind doing, but I just don't have the skill to. Say, for instance, like a trance track. You know, I can't get in there, play keys, and just get really melodic. But I can get really down and dirty with some techno.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, are you... electronic music is such like an open-ended kind of like form. It's almost an abstraction to say electronic, but we'll call you electronic. Do you agree sort of with, I think I once heard Deadmau5 say that, like, you know, we aren't really musicians. We're more like innovators of technology or that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially okay. with, the growth of music, you can't really stick into the mainstream cookie cutter straight off the service packs and right into the record pools or right into radio artistry as much as you used to. But there's always going to be that empty hole to fill because it's more familiar, especially with people that listen to certain types of music. But there's always a cycle within music. Yeah. And one of the great things that I like to stick to is that I've built my own style in a sense that it's unique to myself. And I'm hoping that one day it will come back around where it's a search for artists that are really out there, really strange and weird, that people will gravitate to that they've never listened to before. But now that they're open to listening to new music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's always kind of the thing about electronic is, I'm sure you'd agree, you can always sort of reach sort of a new sound that's has its limitations and a past tradition. So that, so putting, I guess, in a Peterborough, Ontario form. So it's like you said, you're coming to our Nogo Juwanong Indigenous Fringe Festival, or NIFF. Is there someone who contacted you about this for this year? And I will start there, I guess. Is it just how you got in contact with coming all the way out east here?
I don't really remember where I had saw the post, but I believe I saw it online somewhere. I wasn't contacted. It was just something that looked interesting that I would submit to. And I had also... sent the application to one of my friends who unfortunately wasn't able to make it for this show. I had to cancel, but it was just a reach out and hope that maybe they'll select, or they're looking for applications for this to happen. And it's around that same time of, I wouldn't say opening up, because things are, still on a touch and go kind of situation, but that's the East. Here on the West, it's a little different, especially that with live shows. I'm sure that the East is probably a little jealous on how open the West is for live shows. It's like after hours are no masks, limitations are not as limited, and all this other random stuff. But it's a strange time. I'll put it that way.
Well, yes, highly strange. So definitely some low points the last few years.
Yeah, with that in mind, though, it was just a reach out to kind of see who would be able to garner these bookings from and move forward with that, because it was a time of nobody was booking anything. There was pretty much is festivals going to happen for this summer? That last summer, they were very touch and go, and then a lot of them canceled or postponed, and just kind of casting that net and reaching out to the NIF itself was, as I said, was intriguing, because it's the only indigenous fringe festival in North America.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's, I think I could be, I'm pretty sure it's only maybe its second or third year running. So it's just, it's a fairly new thing. So it's great that we've had, like I would say what they have this year, including yourself, of course, come leaps and bounds even from what they had last year. Not that that was anything to anything wrong with that, but like you said, we sort of had our still kind of more of in a lockdown mood. I'd say we're becoming a lot more like the West out here in the East. It kind of depends where you are. There's still some places, like if you're in Toronto a lot, you'll see a lot more of a presence of, say, masks than you do in Peterborough. I don't know if you're going to see too much of that out here so much, but you're playing, is it three or four different shows out here?
Yes, there'll be four different shows. There will be Friday, there's the 7 o'clock performance. Saturday, there's two performances, one at 2:30 and one at 10 p.m. And then Sunday is a closer for 8 o'clock. What I've done for these four different shows, I've made them for essentially four unique shows in the aspect of different parts of the medicine wheel. Mm-hmm. So that on the Friday show, it's going to be like the air show. Mm-hmm. Saturday at 2 o'clock will be, or 2:30 will be the earth portion. And then later on in the evening at 10 o'clock will be water, and then fire on Sunday. And the the reason behind that is that there is so much material that I haven't been able to get out there and share, especially within this pandemic. There are three or four different albums that I've worked on within the past couple of years of being in a pandemic. And prior to that, the award-winning albums that I've won, that I've produced with Project Axiom, my first one, Torn, my second, mm-hmm. and then congratulatory. What is it?
Are you talking about, Electronic Turtle Dream, but
well, before that one was NYD, New
Year's
Day.
That's what I was going to say. Yes. Yeah.
The more or less the ode to myself for my 10 years of being, at that time, my 10 years of being sober, of my sobriety. Right. So that was the reasoning behind that album. And then obviously the Electric Turtle Dreams after that, and the remix album that I did, and the releases I never speak of, which is an interesting one. And then there's one that haven't released yet that I'll be doing a lot of, I'll pull a lot of tracks from and show Peterborough in a live setting, which is called Tipiscalpisum. Mm. So that's going to be fun too. And it's just the build of the different shows, which would be unique in their own aspect, so that it's not going to be the same for each one, and that I'll have a different bits of all the material that I've put together, are produced, written, and composed within the past.
Thank you. away from it. Yeah.
Yeah. The group is called Red Nation.
Okay. I don't know where I got the O in there. Okay. Never mind. Red Nation. That makes more sense. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
And that was R-E-double-D Nation. Mm-hmm. So the group is called Red Nation. It was a more or less of an outlet of more of an ouch. Was it offshoot of a group that was an older group that was established here in Calgary, but was a bunch of members from Driftball Cree Nation. So there was my brother and a couple of my cousins, and then a guy from Sucker Creek. And so it was in the area kind of thing. And they just built from their influences of hip hop within the older 90s, late 80s. There was my two cousins and my brother who used to go by Magical on in Red Nation. They had a group called Full Blooded. And so with Full Blooded, they also brought in the other member from Sucker Creek, and they did some performances around Calgary, and it was more traditional aspect with the flavor of hip hop or lyricalism within the performances. So it's very old school, very pioneer-esque back in the day, and then move forward a couple of years where it kind of petered out. They were also traveling along with a theater dance group called Red Thunder. And so after a couple of years, they've kind of no longer traveled and decided to do more of a hip hop thing. The founding member of Red Nation, he brought myself and my brother into the group, and that's in 2002. And so from 2002 to 2013, we did performances as Red Nation for a lot of communities, mostly Indigenous, and some shows of non-Indigenous or of mixed cultures throughout North America. And then throughout that time, I've spent honing my craft of sound engineering, DJing, producing, and then also being a tour manager and like the driver of the van, I guess.
Okay.
And the good thing about 2006, because at this time we were halfway into still touring and still had Half-Life before retirement in 2012 of Red Nation, that in 2006 I decided to take onto a different path in life and chose to become sober. So I was always the driver after that, and you know, the roundup of herds of cats.
There's something you felt more you could gain from sort of being more of a solo act, although I notice your brother from time to time has played on tracks of yours, but like after Red Nation, but yeah.
Well, at that time it was, we've come to, I guess, the end life of Red Nation as a group, and collectively decided to retire, and we retired in October. I can't remember the date, but it was mid-October 2013, and it was just my brother and I who had done a last show at Onion Lake, Saskatchewan. It was kind of interesting. A little sidebar note before getting into the carrying on as a solo artist. When we did our show, our last show in Onion Lake, we were late for the show, and it was for a good reason. So we pull up, and it's just my brother and I, and we had some gear. We pull up to the front of, I think it was the school, and outside of the school into like the bus lane or pickup, wherever this person was, this lady, she had a flat tire. And so not one to kind of just walk by if somebody's, you know, in need of help. We just kind of took it upon ourselves and helped her. Well, I wouldn't say helped her change a tire. We just kind of helped us to help her as we changed her tire, and then, you know, helped her to get on her way. And then we went into the gym, and it's like, well, we're late because, you know, we're helping out one of your community members, and that's the reason why we're late. We're, you know, we apologize for that. But we're just going to, you know, kind of get to it and get the show on the road kind of thing. But yeah, it was just one of those things as those little road stories. That's one of them I like, is just, you know, just helping out other people as we went. And that was a very bittersweet show that we did, because obviously it was our last one for retirement as a group. And then after that, I just, myself as a solo artist, I just wanted to keep on going and pursuing a career in music, and to go back to my electronic roots as not just a open format DJ or electronic art. Mm-hmm. And so once my once I put it everything together in 2013, I was also still working on this said project, and then continued it after the retirement. I came up with the album, my first album, Project Axiom, and I carried on a little bit of what I did at the time to electronic artists production wise, and I made it essentially a DJ mixed album.
Right. So it's kind of more just a natural evolution, kind of what mm-hmm. you're sort of saying. Yeah. Now, I'm going to go up maybe a bit off base here, but I don't know if you've ever read the book. This came out a few years ago, but it's really blew me away when I read it, called "There, There" by Tommy Orange.
Title sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's a fictional work, but it basically was about the First Nations who, like in the late 60s, whatever, took over Alcatraz for a few weeks or whatever that was in California. Yeah.
Isn't that also the same book that was pulled off the libraries like 2 months ago?
I don't know that story, so that might be true. I don't know why that would be, but that could be it. I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that one. But yeah, I'm proud to still have a copy myself. Well, I'm bringing it up not so much about quizzing you when you're reading, but just one quote of it. I just I guess I was thinking of you when I was thinking of this. So they bring up in one quote, like A Tribe Called Red. And I think it says something like this. I just have to get my thing here. And while you're viewing this, how this sort of the author sort of takes this. He's having one character talking about it. And so he's describing A Tribe Called Red. And he says, they're a group of First Nations DJs and producers based out of Ottawa. They make electronic music with samples from powwow drum groups. It's the most modern or most postmodern form of Indigenous music I've heard that's both traditional and new sounding. The problem with Indigenous art in general is that it's stuck in the past. The catch or the double bind about the whole thing is this. If it isn't pulling from tradition, how is it Indigenous? And if it's stuck in tradition in the past, how can it be relevant to either Indigenous people living now? How can it be modern? So he just brings up sort of that point of, how there's something about A Tribe Called Red that's sort of able to transcend this kind of what he's saying, this double bind of like, you know, you're, a lot of our First Nations, of course, like have been trying to like, as you know better than me, trying to reclaim a lot of their past, but at the same time, having it apply to like right now. So there's some way that electronic music was able to do that, at least with A Tribe Called Red. I just found that kind of interesting at that point. I don't know if you have any views on that sort of thing there, to sort of electronic music or, this whole, or if you recognize what he's talking about when he says this double bind.
Oh, definitely. There's that bridging of the gap that needs to happen. And mm-hmm. I think that's where it filled. And this niche of electronic tribal powwow music is where a lot of urban Indigenous people will gravitate to for a voice. May it be electronic with music or with an actual voice of, say, urban music, hip hop, and lyrics, storytelling. But yeah, I do see the pushback or the let's move forward with something to change the narrative in storytelling or within old stories to get to a new audience. With those being on reserve or those being urbanized, mm-hmm. there's definitely something there that needed to bridge the gap. And yeah, I think that's probably what it was, because especially with A Tribe Called Red, they were able to do that. They were able to get out there and break into the mainstream and show that, you know, not just every Indigenous person out there has – like there's limits to being indigenous, sure, but there's also things that could break said limits in a bigger group, or in those in the aspect of a bigger family. Mm-hmm. So it's a coming together of different nations. Is always going to build a bigger gathering. Just like with here in Calgary, there's weird history between Blackfoot and Cree people, where there's like historical animosity between the two different groups of Indigenous people. But in reality, there isn't, because it's like we're all fighting the same fight kind of thing. So if we're all in the same, what is it? The enemy of my enemy is my friend, or something like that. So, you know, it's the coming together. And the thing about Tribe Called Red is they're able to get out there and do this stuff and make the headway within the mainstream with the different awards that they've won, their accolades, Junos, and then even though they had to go through their own different turmoil within their group itself, they were able to still, you know, do their own thing in that aspect, where who is it now, who is the Hallucination, do their own thing. And then DJ Shub is doing his own thing with his powwow step, and just recently won his won a Juno for the Contemporary Artist of the Year for the Junos for this year. So you know, there's those that are still making moves, and then it just, I think in that it shows that there's a lot more that Indigenous people can do, and there's not really much, there's no limit.
Right. Yeah. And I, and if you find out if there was pulled off the shelves, I'm going to have to find that out, because I wouldn't know. There has to be a good explanation for that. Anyway. Now as one, now there's, you are one thing I've noticed is that, like, obviously dance is you're doing a lot of tracks that, you know, can be certainly defined as dance music. Do you think a lot of do you ever do you ever consider using sort of like dancers as a sideshow of part of some of the tracks that you've put on anywhere?
I've definitely thought about the artistic, the theatrical aspect of the artistic side for visual, what would it be called? Like auditory, but like the visual senses of having contemporary dance or traditional dance to heighten the music that I have, or to add it towards the show itself. I mean, I think it's neat. It gives the opportunity of not just the artist, but also to the performer to kind of share the stage in that sense, where you're essentially collabing every time that you perform. And it's just like having like an abstract dancer or a professional ballet dancer doing certain routines and certain pirouettes, where it's part of the skit, or it's part of the piece, the whatever's composed, to work together with it. I think it's neat. I haven't had the opportunity to do it yet, but I'm definitely open for the opportunity. And you know, obviously for people in Peterborough, if they're Indigenous and they have regalia and they're willing to come out and, you know, share the stage with me, I'm open for them to jump on a stage with me. That's also an open invitation for any of the performers that are at NIF as well. There's some interesting ones this year for the second annual NIF festival. Right. So that's great. To go back on the book that was pulled was in Durham. It was actually a Great Bear.
Great Bear. Right. I remember reading that story. Yes. Okay. Yeah. But, I don't know if you've been made aware that we have three reserves within like I would say half an hour of Peterborough. So the biggest one being called Curve Lake First Nation. So, which maybe is only about maybe like a 20 minute drive from where you're playing. So, yeah. So, and I guess you've mentioned a lot of your albums before, a lot of them being, like you were mentioning, Tribe Called Red, their awards. Well, you've won quite a few awards yourself or been nominated for quite a few. Indigenous Choice, you won at least two or three, I believe. I guess I'm wondering, how do you think your music has evolved from, say, Project Axiom up to, like, At Least I Never Speak Up, or at least what you're saying is coming up to your 2023 album?
Definitely there's been a huge change, as my partner would attest. Okay. She mentions that listening from the first album, Project Axiom, to the music that I have unreleased from the upcoming album, Tipiscalpisum, she would say, and I would definitely agree with her, there's the growth, and not just the growth, but also the lessons that I learned along the way as an artist from being self-taught, the music theory that has become more of a better understanding. So the first album, it's just, if I were to strip away the 15 tracks, I think it's 15 tracks of songs that are on the album Project Axiom, I could probably, at least within each track, there's probably like three or four different songs in each track melodically, because there's just so much into it. I think it was just one being fairly new to it and green and fresh and still young and hungry to come out and build an album of such. And then to where it is now, where it's more cohesive, I guess, where there's, mm-hmm. There's reasonings on why it sounds this way, or the music is in key. It's not just complimentary keys or something that doesn't sound out of tune. Like, there's reasons for it being on there and why it's there and how it's arranged. So definitely from the first to where it is now, I'd say there's been a lot of growth, and quicker. There's a lot of a quicker turnaround from what I hear in my head to what I put onto my DAW and what comes out from the speakers.
Right. Is the whole process, especially when you're using like electronics, is it a bit like what I think I heard David Bowie once say about painting? There's sort of, you have to know when it's not enough and when it's too much, and kind of find that middle line sort of thing, when you know when to stop. That's, he says, basically the hardest job is knowing when it's enough.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing that I've learned as an artist within the past years. It's even past decades, it's the learning to let go and know when to call it finished. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be finished. Every song that an artist does or producer, it's never finished. It's like, months later or years later, it's like, oh, that kick could sound a lot more better if I tuned up this, or that hi-hat, what was I thinking? You know, this could be better. You know, I can hear another different melody in that song or whatever. And it's never going to be done, but it's just that letting go of this is it. This is the most that I should put into it, because if I put in more, it's going to be crap. Okay. It gets to that point, it's like, here's the pinnacle, right. And like, you start off, it's Jackson Pollock, and then you're slowly turning into Van Gogh, and then from Van Gogh you have you're building your Mona Lisa, then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. man, where did I end up with this crayon and stick people? Yeah. But at least it was colored in the lines, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. This maybe doesn't stand out as something that'll hold up over the years, maybe. But and now, one album of yours I really enjoy listening to quite a bit, and I don't know, it maybe because it fits maybe this time of year, even though so far I don't know if it's been dry and warm out west for you, but here it's been kind of wet and kind of coolish so far, though it's supposed to start to get warmer soon. But like something that sort of like vibes of summer in kind of a hard hitting way was your Electric Turtle Dreams album. I don't know if you had any sort of thinking concept behind that. And by the way, I do love the album cover on that as well, but just a photograph of that one. But yeah.
Yeah. The album cover is, a photo that I took when I was in Glasgow.
Oh, okay.
So all of the artwork, almost all the artwork of all my albums I've done myself, and the art direction of it. Some weird back alley that just seemed to stick out to me. So being that I hadn't been in Scotland before, I was just taking photos, and it was just an alley that, you know, seemed to catch my attention. I used that one for Project Axiom. Like all of the different album covers that I have, they have all significant times in my life where there's different parts. Well, actually, that one was a little different because that one wasn't with my partner. I was in Scotland with my brother. So, but for like Project Axiom, that's a dog tag that I wear around my neck because it was given to me by my mother. And so it kind of gives the where I'm from, kind of keeps me grounded because it says from Driftball. Mm. And so that's Project Axiom there. That one was a build of Journey from Safe Haven all the way to Project Axiom. Kind of like takes you on a journey between tracks. And with Torn was a photo taken by my partner when we were in, I think it was London. Mm. And NYD was a photo sitting outside of the beach in Kihei in Maui. And what's the other albums? The remix album that I did was just me here at home in my studio. Mm-hmm. And the releases I never speak of was just some weird little like toy or ball or whatever it is that was sitting in the gutter.
Okay.
But it was there in the gutter and it was by itself, but it had a big smile on its face. So I was like, that's a pretty neat little situation there. And back again with the Electric Turtle Dreams, I was in Glasgow, and the one that I have coming up for my Tip Scout Piesum as a I guess to say it's a little bit more artsy, mm-hmm. more not composed, but there's a lot more different things added to it. So it could be that it's still in the works, or I can change it because it's obviously not public yet. So there's still that preview phase. But there's something mentioning about the Electric Turtle Dreams album that in the corner, far right corner, mm-hmm. there is a phrase, and I think the phrase is from Shakespeare in the graffiti. Okay.
All right. I can see that. Okay. I no doubt there is. I can't quite pick up on it myself. But anyway, okay. That's an astute observation. Okay, yes, I see one in the far right corner there. Yeah. Okay. All right. If only I had Shakespeare down, I could maybe be able to place where that what play that comes from. But anyway, yeah.
Okay. I have of late, but mm-hmm. wherefore not, I know not. Lost all. Yeah. So there's a little quote there in a corner.
Okay. So overall, I'm getting from you, you certainly one aspect of your artistic being is you have a definite fascination to a point with photography then.
If music didn't work out for me to where it is right now, where I actually enjoy it and I'm able to perform it in front of people, I think the other fallback for me would have been photography. But my younger brother, that's what he does. So I'm kind of leaving it for him to do his photography thing. Yeah, the whole family is kind of artistically inclined. So that's where they have their skills. I kind of do not, in a sense of music. My younger brother, he was on a track of mine in on the album NYD for My Spirit Is Rising. So he plays the guitar.
That's
Elijah B. And my youngest brother, he also, he will be up and coming. So I'm pretty sure that there's going to be an album or two that I'll be producing for him. And he'll have his whole MC career out there because he's been building, writing a bunch of tracks and hopefully we're probably going to get him in the studio and record him. And most likely I'll probably produce him, but he is very talented as well. And then my sister writes, she's a great writer.
Okay. And it, and is this some of this spring from like, either your parents or your mother or something as well, like some sort of artistic background they have?
Yeah, I believe so. There's I can't remember what my mother used to do in the sense of like play music or stuff. I know that she used to teach and my father would play in a band or guitar. And obviously the intellect comes from both parents, but my mother was also a teacher. So, you know, that's probably where the smarts come from and the streets come from my father, I guess. I don't know. The for me, that didn't grow up. Like I didn't become a player of music, or like a musician that plays music. Mm-hmm. For me, it's just all by ear, knowing different notes, stuff that are, I'm not tone deaf in a sense. And I draw, I really can't play much of, music in compositions on a keyboard or synth or whatever it is, whatever it may be, but I can draw it out and, that's where I'm kind of limited, but also learning still. So my foray into music was when I was, I don't know, 6, 7 years old. And my mother tried to get me to learn violin.
Okay. Well, which, yeah, that's a big challenge. But there are many acclaimed musicians, though, you know, revered ones, I'd even say, that don't really have any formal training whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, the most famous Paul McCartney still supposedly can't read music. So, you know, it hasn't hurt him. So, yeah. So, and now I should point out, yes, I know it goes back to maybe 16 years ago now, but yeah, congratulations on staying sober for 16 years. Now, I just was wondering, just on that aspect, has music itself like been one sort of source of like helping you with that challenge at the time, like way back in 2006, or was some parts of like music life maybe imposing a challenge on that?
Well, I think that music itself was my outlet, and once I became sober, a lot of things became more clear, and I was able to take which was in my head for melodies, thoughts, or ideas electronically that I had wanting to put down into some sort of composition. May it just be like this swingy, jazzy little instrumental drum beat, or some sort of track that just that I had ringing around my head. I was able to put that out into the DAW that I was working at the time, which was Fruity Loops or FL Studio, to which I moved to now, where I've passed the learning curve of the steep learning curve of Ableton. So Ableton Live is the DAW that I use now. And it was kind of night and day with that, with the two different DAWs. But it was becoming sober was was definitely a leaps and bounds move forward, because it wasn't just the music that I was able to hear. It was also the past that I was able to let go of or mm-hmm. Deal with a lot more. And mm-hmm. so it would be funny where I would try to make a song or some sort of instrumental or a beat or whatever it may be and choose an emotion. And mm-hmm. it would be the opposite of that emotion in the final product. So if I went in thinking that, okay, I'm going to make a poppy, mainstream, happy, instrumental or song or something, it would end up, you know, going dark or, not as happy. Mm. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I still have some things to deal with. So, you know, progression within that was always the interesting aspect of making music. So just having the ability to see it a lot more clearer was the definite plus becoming sober.
Okay. And has sobriety as well helped you sort of maybe have a clearer mindset or a clear plan of how you like have consistently incorporated like powwow drumming and percussion into your works? Like it ends up being like sounding at least something like how you want it to in the end.
There's that, the acceptance within being able to throw in different aspects of, the powwow culture within my music, but also, not having those influences say over alcohol or whatever it may be. And, mm-hmm. the hold to, become a little bit more accepted within my own culture, to gravitate to more of the identity of being indigenous, mm-hmm. and also, you know, to break those stereotypes. And, you know, obviously there's many different stereotypes, and the one that I like to squash, I guess, is, you know, a lot of indigenous people, all they do is drink or whatever, they just party or whatever it may be. And half of that stereotype may be true for me because I don't drink, but you know, I could party, but I'm there to have a good time sober. You know, mm-hmm. it's that, that energy that I'm able to put out, especially when I'm performing live. It's, I just get into the music and it's just a, you know, it's just fun for me. It's like going to the gym and yoga while I'm watching a movie and racing a race car all at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds fun. And do you get out to like, I assume where you still call home, do you get out to Drift Pile like at all during the year, or is it like a rare visit? Or I know it's the same province, but it's quite a task, like if you, especially if you don't have access to a car, which I'm not sure if you do, but if you don't, I can see that being quite a hard process.
Yeah, definitely. I try to as much as I can. I mean, previous years I was maybe going up north once or twice a year, and it's mm-hmm. 7 hour, almost 8 hour trip coming mm-hmm. from Calgary all the way to Drift Ball. So that's just one way. And if I was to take a nice, good leisure, relaxing week off or a weekend off to go up north and visit, then you know, I'm also allocating that extra 17 hours of drive time. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But a lot of times what I did was just rented a car, but I recently purchased my own vehicle. So to bring up Drift Ball, there's mm-hmm. Going to be a travel up north coming soon. So we'll probably make a lot more trips back up north. The family up north is getting older, and
right.
I think it's probably better that I'm able to go up there and visit a lot more, with a lot more opportunities to go up and visit in the purpose of visiting as of before, when within the pandemic or before that, a lot of times when I went up were unfortunate times for say like a funeral or, type of gatherings.
Mm-hmm. Now just one other final point, I guess. You say you have a younger brother who's about to enter a similar field to yours, and how old is your younger brother currently
is 29.
29. Okay. Yeah. He's about to enter this. And you've someone who's, according to what I've read, you've been making your own music since the 90s. So, so you've been, you know, you've seen and, you've seen a lot of things happen. I don't know. Is there a certain way of a, like, you know, the music industry in a lot of ways is quite challenging right now. Is there certain things you would like advise to him, or like, you know, maybe own missteps of yours that you don't want him doing, sort of thing? Or, you know, is it like, I guess, you know, what's your advice to him, in other words?
My advice would be, don't do it if you want to get in. Yeah. If you want to get in for it to make money, $1 million, then, you know, you definitely have to have that it thing. But I'd say, you know, I know that he loves music and he has that voice that he wants to get out there and tell his story. It's obviously, I'm going to support him in any which way that I can. Take the opportunity, do it.
Yeah,
if you fail, at least you tried to do it in the first place, you know, but there's different levels of failure.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's definitely worth trying. It's better than sitting around in your late 40s, early 50s, regretting you never tried. So yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other thing I was going to get on. Now, you do have a certain, like you said, you at the beginning, you're trying to sort of develop this medium between electronic and hip hop. So you obviously have a certain something, I guess, like do you still sort of at times like sort of feel like it's good to have sort of a hip hop voice adding another dimension maybe to your track? That's what I'm saying.
I think so. I'm always open for the opportunity if somebody's wanting to throw some weird acapellas to a track. One of the tracks that really stick out to me and come to mind, especially right now, would be the one with Keith Murray and Chemical Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Electrobank? No.
Okay.
That's before that one. But yeah, it's just the hip-hop lyricalism and electronic beats, they match really well. I mean, even going back with Chemical Brothers and Q-Tip on their track Go,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just has that. That's more of the story aspect of, you know, you're able to follow along through lyrics of verses and choruses. And that's one thing that, as an instrumentalist, as myself, I would have to strip back some of the different elements that I normally put in just to kind of pocket those lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, that's, yeah, I can see that really working for you. Well, we're looking forward to you coming here to Peterborough. Now, is there some track, I guess you could, I usually say this to most musical artists I've on, is there some track you could recommend that might be part of one dimension of your medicine wheel that you're going to play in Peterborough? Either one of your latest single releases or something that is from some other, what you've done recently from that.
Well, when I did release the album Electric Turtle Dreams, it was mm-hmm. on my birthday, which mm-hmm. is February 29th, and it was in the year 2000. No, that's wrong. It was in the year 2020, and was it the next week or the week after that? That's when the whole pandemic hit and everybody was on lockdown, and my intentions were that here's an album. I'm going to push it. I'm going to get it out there and maybe hopefully – do a couple of tours and showcase it to a lot of people that have never heard my music before. And yeah, and then everything got locked down, shut down. So having this opportunity in Peterborough, it will be the opportunity for me to showcase the Electric Turtle Dreams in the performance aspect that I wanted to do years before. And I was going to mention also something else there. Where was going with that? But anyways, there's a couple of tracks on there that I really do like. They kind of stand out. They do fit almost in all of those different four corners of the medicine wheel. But one of them is a little bit more earth, I guess. And that's the In the Meadow.
Okay. Right.
And the interesting thing about the album Electric Turtle Dreams, we had some sort of resurgence. It's back on music charts, like the Earshot music chart, the National Earshot music chart. It was a number 4 or number 6 or something in the top 10. And I have to make my way out to Kelowna because it was sitting on their number 1 CFUV, I think it is, in Kelowna. It was sitting on their number 1 electronic chart for like 2 weeks. It's still there, and it's like, oh, okay, that's great. It's nice to know that I have people that I've never heard that heard my music that like my music. So with the shows themselves being the four different unique show times and the four different unique shows, and the treat that I will be giving for each purchase of said show, because 100% goes to the artist of the admission. My gift back to the people that are going to be in attendance, they will get, four inch vinyl sticker. And there's really? 4 of them. Yeah. So they're all different. So if you come to each different show, you'll get a different sticker.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's like a huge vinyl sticker. Actually, yeah. Mm-hmm. Give me a second. I'll show you.
Okay. Yeah. Got to see this. Okay.
Yeah. So I got a bunch of them put up and made for this gig. So that
was... Okay. Well, sadly, only an audio show here, but yeah.
I got a nice big sticker that's 4 inches wide that has my logo, that has, some, Cree on it, and has my website. And there's one that's graphic, and this graphic one has
nice purple outline or kind of yes to it. Yeah.
So it comes in white, it comes in black, it comes in graphic, and comes in transparent. So, you know, there's a lot of fun that I'm looking to have, especially being in Peterborough for the first time, and I'm happy for NIF bringing me out there. I mean, all my merch is available on SeanBeaver.com. What you see there is the Cree syllabics. So it's just Cree syllabics, and the top is written out as Sean, so S-E-A-N, and the bottom is actually Umsk, and that means beaver.
Oh, okay.
Or okay. Umsk, it's Plains Cree or Woodland Cree.
Okay. All right. Nice. All right. Well, I'll put a shot of that up on my my webpage my podcast site, so people can see that when they do that. So I'll make a note of that. Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much. And I guess I can't get all 4 stickers, I hope I'll get at least 2 from your upcoming shows there when you're coming. And best wishes to you. And I hope it's not your last time you're going to come out east as well.
I am hoping as well that this is just the opening to many.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, take care, Sean, and thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
All right. Thank you.